of recent concern over data center wastefulness, there are many who stand out as data center innovators. A new book, The Art of the Data Center, highlights these gems and provides interviews with some of the key players who architected their designs. I'm Erin Watkins, and joining me on the phone is Douglas Alger, author of Art of the Data Center. Hi there, Doug.
Hi, Erin.
So, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself to get started?
Sure. I'm an IT architect that works at Cisco Systems. I've been in the data center industry for about 15 years. Started off doing operations sort of work, helping people install gear into their cabinets, and then moved into doing design work in data centers, helping to create these rooms. My background, though, actually goes before that to I'd worked for years as a newspaper reporter. So I'm always one who's interested in getting to talk to people and finding out the stories behind things, which is a big piece of what led me to actually writing this book.
So would you say that's what inspired you to make it then?
Well, actually, what actually inspired me was, go back a few years, I was actually working on a different book called Grow a Greener Data Center that was looking at how people can build rooms that are energy efficient, limit their environmental impact. While I was in the midst of doing that, I came upon a data center that Vanoff, an ISP, data center that they had built in Stockholm, Sweden. And if you looked at a couple of the articles on it, it showed pictures with artificial waterfalls, submarine engine generators, fog in their command center, and this all had been built in this underground nuclear bunker. And I thought, what a really cool place. But even more than that, I was wondering, well, what were the decisions that had to be made to come up with this? I just love the idea that somebody at some point said, you know what this data center needs? Waterfalls. So I was really interested in it, but that wasn't the focus of the book. And I was doing research around geothermal cooling, which is what led me to some underground spaces. But I put that off on the shelf and continued to work on the other book. But it was really starting there that I thought, people are making these interesting decisions around these sites. It's not all about, is there enough electrical capacity and is there enough computing power? People are doing really interesting things in these rooms.
Excellent. So then which of these data centers did you get to actually visit in person, and which ones are most interesting?
Sadly, I did not get to visit the majority of these data centers. Almost all of them I had to do by remote control. But then part of the fun about that is I got to talk to the different people designing them and said, pretend you were taking me or someone else on a tour of this room. Tell me about it. Tell me what's interesting. Send me some images and take it from there. So there was also an element of impress me with it to justify the fact that, yes, this is truly an innovative room. In terms of the one that's most interesting, all of them to a certain degree are interesting. Others, they wouldn't have made it their way into the book. But I suppose special mention certainly needs to go to Vanoff, because that's the first one that pulled in my attention. Another one that I thought was fascinating is there's a supercomputing center in Barcelona, Spain, that they built in this 1920s chapel. And I had actually come upon a picture of it several years ago, and I confess, when I first saw it, I thought someone had photoshopped it, because it shows this gorgeous chapel and you can see the elaborate stained glass windows and all, you know, just this gorgeous looking space with what looks like this big glass box with all of this gear in it, all of this computing hardware in the cabinets. And I thought, well, wait, that can't be real. Well, sure enough, it is real. There was also another facility that it's the Calcul Quebec facility, where they took this old concrete silo that had housed a linear accelerator, and they installed their systems in there. So how do you build this sort of thing in this round, vertical building, and how do you control all the venting? So really any of these rooms where I can imagine people getting together around a table and saying, here's an idea, why don't we build it this way? Those are always the ones that really got my attention.
So in these data centers, what were some common trends that you saw among them? And what about overall in the industry?
Power density is going up. Probably not a big surprise to anyone who's involved with the data center industry. The good news is we have more very powerful computing systems that we can fit all into a given footprint, which then causes some challenges of how do we power and cool it. Liquid cooling is coming back to data centers. Several people that I spoke with talked about they've either installed it to begin with or they have some capacity to make some adjustments later on to bring in liquid cooling to be able to handle that growing density. Raised floors seem to be alive and well. For a while, the trend seemed to be moving away from those, but some people are still finding value in the flexibility that those provide. Hardware doesn't seem to be getting coddled as much as it was in the past. People are pushing those to higher and higher temperatures to reduce their energy consumption and lower those costs. Virtualization is big. It's letting people do more with fewer resources. And then finally, kind of the big bow that goes on top is data centers can be green. Now, this doesn't mean they won't consume anything, because they will, but people are finding ways to optimize everything from the back of house systems, what's happening with power and cooling, to the hardware that they're choosing, and so they're able to get a lot more productive work done while consuming fewer resources.
I've seen a little bit of pushback on the temperature issue, at least. Do you know why people are pushing back?
The big driver for people to want to bump up temperatures in the hardware, it's all around energy savings. Trying to cool a box to 68 degrees when you're packing more and more systems into the same footprint gets really challenging. And the whole assumption we had on why we're trying to keep these systems so cool was around a reliability issue. Well, if I can take my laptop and I can walk around with that and put it in all these really crazy conditions, I turn it on, I turn it off, I put it in the trunk of my car, I take it all these different crazy places, and that laptop can withstand that, can't an enterprise-level server? And so as you start to approach it with that different point of view and are willing to abuse the system a little bit more, you don't have to run your cooling system quite so hard. The other thing is, because people are going more with virtualization, you no longer have one server performing this critical task for a company. You've created this resource pool with dozens or hundreds of servers, and any task that's going on is running on this virtual machine. And if it fails, it's not to say that you don't care, but you care about it a lot less than when it was one critical device. In this case, if you lose something, one virtual instance, well, you've got plenty of others that can still be taking over and doing that same task. So it opens up the opportunities. We don't have to wrap the gear in cotton quite so much, and your back-of-house system doesn't have to work so hard.
Makes perfect sense to me. So what do you think and hope your readers will take away from your book?
I would like folks to have a greater appreciation of what data centers are doing, what they can do. For many years, I think they were ignored. They were completely sitting behind the curtain doing what they do. We didn't pay much attention to them. And then when they would get some attention, it was either because the power bill was high or there was a problem. I would say it's a lot like if you go into your house and you go to flip on the light switch. If the lights come on, you don't think about it. But if you flip on that switch and the lights don't come on, then you want to know what the problem is and how soon is it going to be fixed. Data centers got a lot of that same sort of attention. But if you take a look at what is being done in these rooms today, people are getting in there, they're optimizing them, they're doing very creative things. It's no longer just this room that you happen to roll some gear in, throw in some cooling that's over in the back corner of a building. These are really showpieces for technology. And I'll tell people, even if they don't do anything that they can think of that's tied to a data center, it's probably having actually a significant impact on their life. Every time you write an email and send it, anytime you go online to buy something, if you go to your favorite social networking site, any of these online activities are all facilitated by a data center somewhere. And with that increased demand comes increased pressure on all of this infrastructure. So people are out there doing really interesting things to help them be more efficient and do more.
Sounds like a good message. Well, Doug, thanks for joining us today on the podcast, and I hope all our listeners get something good out of this.
Aaron, thanks very much.